Blog Talk Radio.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode number 700. This is a very momentous mini episode that we have for you today. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris. And in the history of the show, we have now gone 9 years and a month and a half. It was January 14th, 2007, when we debuted in our old format with the first of 152 full-length episodes. Since then, now 700 mini episodes, and we are providing the third installment in a series that goes way back to 2012. This is the February 29th time capsule. We're looking ahead 2016 to 2020. So let me just break this down for you briefly. Mini episode number 89 was posted on February 29th, 2012. Myself and fellow original FDH Lounge dignitary and FDH Director of Research Nate Noy broke down our predictions for the next 4 years in a number of categories: sports, entertainment, politics, technology, etc. Mini episode number 699, of course the most recent one right before this, recapped our predictions, noted who was correct, who was not correct, what had happened over the course of the last 4 years vis-a-vis our expectations for them. Today, mini episode number 700, we are looking ahead. We're doing the same thing we did with number 89. Nate and I are breaking it down. We are breaking down the predictions of both he and I, as well as the other two participants in our original time capsule, FDH Lounge original dignitary Chris Galloway and FDH Lounge dignitary Ron Glasnap, who, of course, I worked with well before the FDH Lounge as part of Reality Check on the Sports Talk Network in 2003 to 2005, sort of a precursor show for the FDH Lounge. We have three other participants this time as well. We have FDH golf editor Mr. Flatstick Tom Denk filing his predictions into the time capsule. We have FDH guest booker Steve Servillo, and we have my good friend FDH Lounge dignitary Kyle Ross, who is my regular partner for segments on football and pro wrestling. Of course, with his day job being a professional handicapper, he has been breaking down football week by week with me since the beginning of the 2012 NFL season, and of course he and I doing a lot in the realm of pro wrestling as well with his previous webcasting experience with Sunday Night Submission. So we have the seven of us with our predictions. I bring in now my good friend, the aforementioned FDH Director of Research, Nate Noy. Nate, it was fun taking a look back at the time capsule from last time, seeing where we were wrong and where we were right. Today, we mark our territory for the next 4 years. How you doing, buddy?
Doing great, Rick. Ready to handle this, and it's crazy. It's been 4 years, as we said on the previous episode. Time can really fly, and it's hard to believe it's been 4 years since we did this.
It really, truly is. But here we are again, and again, this is the kind of thing that I have said on air and off air that I really, really love. It's a chance for us to dig our teeth in to a number of subjects and really kind of show what we can do collectively as an FDH Lounge community. Where we start is where we started last time: pro and college teams to win more than one title in the next 4 years. So this is the quote-unquote Big Four sports in North America, as well as college hoops and college football. Who are we predicting to win more than one title between February 29th, 2016 and February 29th, 2020? We start with Major League Baseball, where last time around it was the San Francisco Giants who were able to do it. Steve Servillo sticking with the Giants this time around, presumably on the every 2 years theory. So it's worked as they did it in 10, 12, and 14. So he must see possibly 16, 18, and 20, or at least two of those three coming true. That's who he's going with. What's very interesting, and Chris Galloway is not predicting anybody to win more than more than one title in the next 4 years. Very interesting is that four of us are going with the Chicago Cubs, who are, of course, part of baseball's most famous present drought going back to 1908. You, Nate, are going with them, as am I, as is Tom Denk, as is Ron Glasnap. It is amazing that the Cubs, it's one of these things where I don't think anybody could have ever imagined this, that when the drought in all likelihood ends, there will be the immediate expectation of another title or two or possibly even more. I think everybody kind of gets this thought in their head that it's going to be a breakthrough, an unexpected kind of a deal when it happens, but it looks like it could be the first title in a dynasty if it happens in the next 4 years, which is truly amazing to think back on all those years of futility in Chicago that it would ever be that way.
Absolutely, and it's interesting because, again, we didn't sit at a round table and come up with these picks. We did them on our own. And when you named this category to me, I thought actually I had to pick one. One, I'm only allowed one out of all sports. And the first team I said, the Cubs. Now, I had a 1B. We'll talk about that in a minute. But with that young nucleus, when you look at the talent, they have 3, 4, 5 all-star hitters, frontline pitching. Jake Arrieta may be the best guy in the big leagues right now. He's right on the cusp. And you took the 2 and 3 guys for their pitching staff right now would be one starters and any other staff, but maybe the Dodgers. It's just amazing what they put together from being just a horrible franchise for decades and century almost. But now they're on the cusp of being a dominant team for a long time. And all they have to do is, you know, keep this young talent in place. And they went out this offseason and added some more things to the team. And like I said, we did it individually. And if I had to pick a team in all sports that has the best chance in my mind to win multiple titles in 4 years, it's this Cubs team, no question.
Absolutely. And I did think in looking at it that the Houston Astros might have a pretty good chance as well. Many of the same things that we say about the Cubs as far as how they've been building, we would also say about Houston. And they were both mirror images as far as taking big, and I would say bigger than expected vis-a-vis that part on the timeline, steps forward in 2015. So nobody picked the Astros, though, but 4 of us for the Cubs. I thought that was really, really noteworthy. When it comes to the NBA, you and I were in agreement again, the Cleveland Cavaliers being the most likely, and again, almost kind of similar to the Cubs when you look at, it's Cleveland overall. It's the drought since 1964 and no major titles, but that it would not only just be one but be two. That would be very much mirroring the Cubs as far as what people would have thought of as the unlikelihood over a period of time. But you and I think we're both looking at the fact that the Cavs are going to continue to come out of the Eastern Conference, and regardless of any tinkering that we see, it doesn't look like they've basically done away with divisions by and large, at least as far as seeding. They're not going to do away with conference alignment. The Cavs will continue to have what amounts to essentially, I think, a bye out of the Eastern Conference as long as LeBron stays healthy each of the next couple of years. The only other picks that we had for this year, the only other individuals who thought that there would be dual champions in the next couple of years, Steve Cervillo and Kyle Ross, both going with the Golden State Warriors. And given the way that they have followed up their first title, it's hard to pick against them as well. So I think most people, if they're going to pick a team, would pick one of these two, because even if you like San Antonio for this present season, at some point it does become, how long is that window really going to be?
I agree with that, Rick, but if you think about what they've got to face out west, and you know, this season, like you just said, they got to get by the Spurs, and then they got to get by the Cavs, and you know,
yep,
they could get beat to death by the Spurs if they do get by the Spurs, and I still kind of like the Spurs this year. OKC, as long as they keep Durant and Westbrook in place, they, you know, somebody's going to have to get by them. There's a potential where they got to get by OKC and the Spurs and the Cavs this year. Next year, sure, Duncan retires, you know, maybe things don't go right for the Spurs. The Spurs are still going to be a really good team. They're still going to have to get by OKC at some point. Maybe they get lucky and they match up against only one of those two, but it's always going to be a more difficult path in the short time period for the Warriors than it is the Cavs, because you just look at the East and you're like, wow, yeah, the Cavs are in the finals. Done. And, you know, they may be in the finals 3-4 times in a row. LeBron is absolutely still in his prime. Yeah, I think he's multiple seasons away from a drop-off. And if that's the case, you know, Steph Curry may be the best shooter on the planet, but when you've got to go through these tournament-style, long series, drag-out battles in the playoffs, I've got to give my, you know, like you said, that was like the third team I thought of. We haven't got to the second yet, but if I had to pick an NBA team, you know, and obviously you can pass. If you really don't think anybody's going to repeat, then we don't pick anybody, but I think the Cavs have a very legitimate shot to win multiple titles in the next two seasons.
I think so as well. That's why you and I voted as we did here. I break with you on this next one because I don't have anybody down for the NFL. For the NFL, the only picks that came in, you and Steve Cervillo, both going with the New England Patriots. So both foreseeing that what has been probably, I would say, the longest run in NFL history as far as a team. You've got New England being the team of the decade, the previous decade, and threatening to win that the next decade as well. Nobody's ever done that successfully. I think the previous mark that we've seen would have gone to San Francisco of the 1980s right into the mid-90s. The Patriots look like they're going to smash through that run that the 49ers had, and you clearly see that as being the case.
Same logic, Rick. You know, I think the Peyton Manning hurdle, is, if it isn't removed now, it will be after at least one more year. He's about done if he stays at Denver. Look at what New England was able to do this year with everybody hurt. The whole receiving core went down for a long period of time, basically, for Brady. I think he still has a few years left in the tank. Clearly, they have the best cheating coach in football in Belichick. he'll find a way to cheat you. Obviously, he puts himself in a position to win either way. And, you know, the NFC, you know, you've got Newton there now on the rise. You still have Aaron Rodgers hanging back there. The NFC still, in my mind, is always a coin flip, and I can see a period of time where the Patriots are going to win two out of four at least of these next four AFC titles, put them in a position to win a Super Bowl. And, you know, I just feel like Brady has a little bit left in the tank to maybe bring home a couple more Lombardi trophies over the next 4 years. And, you know, 4 years from now, it could be absolutely the end of his career. But, you know, I have a strong feeling we've got a few more Patriot runs coming at us. So we'll see how – again, they went through all that with the injuries this year and came really close. They could stay healthy and add a few key free agents this year. They're going to be right in the hunt next year to be back in the Super Bowl. So,
absolutely. I can't disagree with any of the reasoning on that one here. The last of the pro teams, the NHL, you and I looked at this a little bit differently. We were the only ones to pick teams to win more than one title in the next 4 years. You picked the Washington Capitals to do that, and they look like they're going to run away with the President's Trophy this year and get to be the number one seed overall going into the Stanley Cup playoffs. They have had a problem with breaking through. It's kind of a continuing motif here. The Cavs, the Cubs, the Capitals, these are all teams that, again, if they could do it once, the whole fan base would say, I can die happy now. But these are teams that may not be done if they win once. For me, I'm saying the Tampa Bay Lightning. I had picked them to make the Stanley Cup Finals last year going into the playoffs, which seemed a little bit of a reach, I think, to a lot of people. I thought they would even finish off Chicago. They didn't. But when you look at young talent led by Steven Stamkos, arguably the best player in the game, even if he doesn't always seem like it at any given point in time. As we're recording this right now, you'd have a hard time saying that there's not at least one or two guys ahead of him. But he's always in that conversation and really only getting better, I think. So I'm saying Tampa Bay, you're saying Washington. We're both looking at teams coming out of the Eastern Conference to do it, and neither one of us is going with the Chicago Blackhawks, which is the team that did it last time around, two titles between 2012 and 2016.
Yeah, and with Washington, that pick is just based on the fact that they're such a good scoring team. And in a league where goals are so such a premium, you know, they've got a situation now where they're head and shoulders above the field in terms of the scoring productivity. You know, like you said, they're going to run away with the Presidents. That doesn't always turn into a Stanley Cup, as we know, but they're well-positioned. They've got young talent. They've got some of the best skaters in the game. And I have a feeling they may make their fans happy a couple times over the next 4 years. So I'm going out there and picking them on this one.
Yeah, and I think that's pretty sound reasoning. For NCAA hoops, we only had two individuals making picks on that, or actually three individuals making picks. Ron Glasnap says Kentucky hoops, as does Kyle Ross. Steve Cervillo says Duke hoops. And when you're doing something like this, especially with, again, all the one-and-dones that we're seeing in the modern game here, it's essentially just going with teams that are on that short list of chalk teams, perennial contenders, because we're forecasting, I think, with a strong degree of certainty that the recruiting is going to continue to be strong a couple of years out. And that's basically what it comes down to. Out of the McDonald's All-American game every year, who ends up with the most slam-bang pro prospects out of that group? Kentucky is usually the team to beat on paper recruiting-wise, so it's interesting that two of the three went with Kentucky. But they haven't really converted the last couple of years. They had a couple of strong looks at it, but only had one title out of that. So two for Kentucky, one for Duke, and I'm sure that wouldn't be a surprise to anybody that's hearing this.
No, and I thought about this category, but A, I don't think Calipari's going to be there 4 years from now. And we already saw what happened
right to
Toby Smith. Billy Gillespie's your coach. No matter, your name's Kentucky. If you don't have Calipari, you're not a perennial Final Four team. It's that simple.
And Coach K, you and I talked about this. We looked at the Duke team. And we're like, when's the last time Duke missed a tournament? Well, Coach K had back problems one time in the last 25 years. That's the only time they missed the tournament. Coach K is getting real old. So if he goes and retires 2 years from now, you know, the Duke program in my mind won't be a perennial Final Four team either. So just too many things can happen in college basketball. It's too hard to get through the tournament. I would be very surprised if any team is able to take two championships in four seasons in that tournament. It's just too hard to do.
Yeah, I think so as well, particularly, again, the vast turnover from year to year. The programs that have the best draft classes are going to lose them right away and end up having to reboot. And, again, that sometimes is a little bit harder than it looks as far as bringing it all the way in. And when you look at Calipari with two very close near misses plus the one title over the last 4 years, I think that's more of what you can expect from a lot of the top programs as opposed to more than one title. We go to NCAA football to close out this category. Only one team was picked, and that won't be much of a surprise. The Alabama Crimson Tide were picked by Steve Cervillo, by Kyle Ross, and by you, Nate. And, again, with Nick Saban, they have been perennial contenders. It's kind of the same thing we're saying about Kentucky hoops, really, we're saying about Alabama football. So it's not a surprise that they're getting named on all of the ballots here of anybody that picked NCAA football. Strong recruiting classes, the ability to coach in-game. I think most people would give Saban an edge over Calipari in that, given that Calipari has failed to convert some of these looks over the years. Saban hasn't had as much of a problem with converting his looks. Alabama's about as chalk as it gets, I think.
It is a super chalk pick, but that was my 1B team. You know, I mean, I'm thinking, wow, name a team that's likely to repeat. Alabama football just has so much going for it. You know, maybe Michigan, Ohio State will be in that run for the next few years with coaching staffs and recruiting classes they have coming, but is Alabama football, I mean, if Nick Saban shows up at your door and says, hey, I want your kid to come play for me, you send your kid to play for him, no matter who he is. And he's got so many kids that are going to be playing on Sundays. Such an advantage. It is the meat grinder of the SEC, but Alabama continuously rises to the top of that meat grinder. And, you know, I just – they're too good. Their program's in too strong a position. Their coach is great. He knows what he's doing. He's a great recruiter. They're a team in solid shape to absolutely win a couple more titles in the next 4 years, as much as most of us may detest them. You know, hopefully one of these Big Ten teams can knock them off in that tournament. But that tournament's two games versus six. You know, that's not even the NFL tournament. All you got to do is make the Final Four, win two games, and you're a national champion. I can definitely foresee Alabama being able to pull that off in the next two times in the next 4 years. So
I think a lot of us could see that, definitely. Most titles in individual sports, that's Category 2. We start with the PGA, most majors in the next 4 years. Almost all of us would think of this as being a very congested three-way race at this point in time. What's interesting is that out of the three guys, most of the votes went to one of them. You, Nate, voted for Jason Day. Steve Cervillo voted for Rory McIlroy. Kyle Ross did not hazard predictions in any of these categories, subcategories here in Category 2. So of the rest of us, of the other four, myself, Tom Denk, our golf editor, Ron Glasnap, and Chris Galloway, all of us going for Jordan Spieth. I don't think any of us would be terribly shocked if it was any of these three guys. I think we'd be shocked if it was somebody else that broke through and did it, because as of this moment in time, those three look to be on a tier of their own.
I agree completely with that, Rick. I mean, if anybody wins three or four majors is not one of those three guys in the next 4 years, it'd just be shocking. You know, maybe one random person wins one, another random person wins another. But for anybody to even win multiple majors, when you've always got to get through those three guys to get it, it's hard to believe. And you know, there, if you play fantasy sports, three predominantly top-priced guys every single tournament, they've always got a chance to win. It's clearly going to be one of those three guys that have the most majors in the next four seasons. And if it's somebody that's not on our radar, like I said, that would just be a shock if that were to happen.
Absolutely. Collectively, they are the chalk. When we look at men's tennis and women's tennis, there is some strong chalk on both sides here. But what's interesting is that there is not unanimity as far as the picks that are being made, because the most adventurous of any of us in terms of casting our votes, I give credit to Ron Glasnap going with Andy Murray, who I think would be the second pick for a lot of us that didn't go with Novak Djokovic. He goes with him. Madison Keys on the other side, that takes a lot of guts. He's picking somebody to break through that's not Serena Williams. She's pretty strong. I mean, if anybody's going to do that. Now, again, nobody's going to have a run like Serena did the last 4 years, probably not even Serena. So for Madison Keys, it may only take, say, three majors and a splintered side, but he may very well be right about that. A couple of us made the same pick. Myself and Tom Denk, our golf editor, both going with Novak Djokovic on the men's side, Serena Williams on the other side. Interestingly, none of us had Serena the last time around. We all thought she'd lose enough steam by 2016. That didn't happen, so I know I'm certainly learning a lesson from that. Steve Cirillo going with Andy Murray and Serena Williams, and Chris Galloway going with Novak Djokovic and Serena Williams as well. So three of us had that combo, actually, as we look at it here. And so as we go down this, Nate, it's very, very interesting that we have a strong number two on the men's side, seemingly in terms of looking at this in terms of Andy Murray. But no real sense on the women's side that if it's not Serena, who's it going to be? I mean, Madison Keys was the one name that was thrown out. But, again, a strong indication of chalk on these picks as we sit here now, just because there doesn't seem to be a lot of viable options.
Yeah. And it's what can happen in those individual sports is that the people at the top are just so far superior to the rest of the field that you just can't even envision them losing, you know, for the next year, one, two people have a chance to win a tournament. And it's crazy that's the case, but look at Serena's dominance lately. And I agree with what you said, that there's a short list of people that can come in there and do it. And, you know, it's an individual sport. It's all about you. There's no, you know, it's not NASCAR. There's no team to worry about. It's you versus another individual. And clearly that's what can happen is somebody has so much more talent, so far superior in their skill set, you just can't win. You can't beat them. So, and then I think that we see
exactly
that with the prediction. I see it play out that way. So,
very much so. But there's a lot of splintering as we look at the last of these ones here in NASCAR. And with NASCAR, what we're going to on this one is who is most likely to win more than one series title over the course of the next 4 years. So Tom Denk selects Jimmy Johnson, who's the only of these guys who's done this before, who's won more than one in 4 years. Ron Glasnap goes with Chase Elliott, a real ballsy pick for a guy who's a rookie in year one of this. I went with Kyle Busch because, again, I do tend to buy into the theory that that's a guy that just needed to break through and that the sky may be the limit afterwards. Kyle Rosse sat this category out. Of course, Steve Cirillo goes with Joey Logano. Chris Galloway goes with Nat Kenseth. You, Nate, went with Kyle Busch. So with you and I coalescing on Kyle Busch, that's the closest we came to consensus in a very splintered and very interesting field.
And it's funny, you and I, again, we didn't compare notes. We just picked it. I watched the Cam shootout at Daytona. I watch a lot of NASCAR, and I saw Kyle Busch make a move I've never seen anybody else make. You know, Kenseth was in the lead. He had something on his grill. Busch made a move around him and helped pull it off his grill by getting in front of him. But then it was game over. Busch didn't give the lead back. He just led the rest of that race. It was over. And Kyle Busch, he's out there and he's just moving up. You know, Atlanta right now, he had a DQ from qualifying, and he's in the top three right now. Why wouldn't he be? He's Kyle Busch. He's so good. His skill set is so good. And he's on the Gibbs team, which, as we talked about in the last episode, the Gibbs team is dominant right now. They're you know, they have the best staff in place. They have the best equipment in place. Everything's rolling for Kyle Busch. And I clearly think if I was going to pick a guy to win multiple titles, it's going to be him. And it does all come down to that Homestead race. And some guys can't run that track very well. Busch just won that track the last time they ran it to win his first championship, which obviously when you're looking at NASCAR, have you done anything there before? Yes, you have. Okay, does that race determine a championship? Yes, it does. So I'm going to take the guy that just won the last one. I know he's one of the top. He's the top driver in my mind. Nobody's going to be able to argue he's not one of the top three drivers. Clearly, if there's anybody I was going to pick that said, yeah, I'm going to pick him twice to win in 4 years, give me Kyle Busch. He's just so good. And, he's got the right equipment. He's got the right team. He's got the right everything. He's the kind of guy that can go out and win you a couple titles because everything's going his way right now. And he certainly has a few really good years left in him.
That's right. That's exactly right. The next couple categories are a lot more straightforward, which is good because we're going to have to be very perfunctory on these. The next category that we have, biggest gate for a U.S. show, UFC or boxing. All of us, all seven of us said that UFC's highest gate for a UFC or for a show in the next 4 years will be higher than the highest gate for boxing, especially with Mayweather Pacquiao off the table, having been done once and looking unlikely for a sequel. boxing doesn't have anything that really could probably stand up to that. So not surprising in that way, Nate.
Not at all. Again, there's nothing on our boxing radar. You and I went through this. At first I thought, well, maybe boxing, but no, there's nothing in boxing everybody's going to be jumping to see. And right now, you know, you and I talked about this off air. Ronda Rousey made the whole circuit, the View and all these other things, crying about thinking about suicide, yada, yada. Her next event is going to be ginormous. And that could end up being the event that wins it for the four-year period. You know, they've got things in the pipeline that people want to see. You can't say the same about boxing. And I think we're certainly going to see the top event end up being a UCF event over the next 4 years.
The funny thing about that with everything with UFC is that Ronda Rousey, the big fight that she had with Holly Holm where she lost, which wasn't even supposed to be that big of a fight going in, it was at the team's home, my favorite team in Australian rules football, the Western Bulldogs. It was their home stadium, Etihad Stadium. So it was kind of cool for me to see that afterwards. They fit like 55,000 in there because UFC in Australia is still a big novelty for in terms of being a live event. Highest grossing movie star is our next category here. And one option that we have for this one and for highest selling musical act, we can always vote somebody not on the radar. That's what Ron Glasnev did. Tom Denk says Sam Worthington in the Avatar sequel, which will come out, I believe, in the next 4 years. Interesting that Ron said that last time around because he thought that the sequel would be before February 29, 2016. So it wasn't the case for Ron last time, but Tom is recycling the exact same pick here. Steve Cervillo says The Rock. Kyle Ross says somebody not presently on the radar. And here's where it gets interesting. Chris Galloway says Mark Hamill. You and I are saying Daisy Ridley, Nate Noy, because the three of us are clearly anticipating it being the Star Wars movie. Now, again, the next one in the series, it's really going to be her, I think, that's number one on the call sheet and not Mark Hamill. So that is going to be very interesting, and I would expect Chris to protest this 4 years from now based on how we grade this. But I think she's going to be number one on the call sheet, Nate.
And I agree with you, Rick, and again, we've made these choices independently. But who had the most predictions right last time, Rick, when we did this?
You and I tied for five, yes. So we did.
You and I tied. Great minds think alike sometimes. And, you know, I think that's the case here, that they're going to do multiple releases of different intermediate Star Wars, like every year, a little one. I don't know what she's going to be in those, but the next big one's coming in the next 4 years. I can't imagine J.J. Abrams not, you know, they're reaching out to, put it this way, my 15-year-old today was playing lightsabers with her cousin because – now Star Wars is in trying to engage young women and younger adult women and young kids, teens, tweens. Perfect for him. He's absolutely going to leave her as the lead for the next one because they're just bringing all that extra money in off this. And I think that'll end up being the high grocer because everybody's ready to see the next Star Wars. Why wouldn't they be? So
you got to think so. Up next, it's the highest selling musical act over the course of the next 4 years. You and Chris Galloway both voted for somebody not presently on the radar. And what was interesting was that was what a couple of us voted for a couple of years ago. We didn't realize that Adele's first album was going to have the legs that it did, the one that was released in 2011. And then subsequently, again, it did keep selling and selling and selling. Now she's released a new one, and it is selling very strongly. So myself, Tom Denk, Steve Cervillo, Ron Glasnev, and Kyle Ross all voting for Adele this time around. You talk chalk. She's as big of a chalk, at least in terms of the votes, as anybody in any category.
Yeah, and I mean, I can see why that would be the case. And she's definitely the easy pick, and it very well may play out that way. And I, like I said in this one, I couldn't think of anybody that jumped to mind. She didn't jump to mind for me, and that's why I went with not on the radar, because 4 years in the entertainment industry – it's a long way to look forward. We have no idea what might be hot 2 years from now. Just think about, you know, some of the, like, all these, like, I can just imagine, you know, 2 or 3 years ago where all this stuff comes out, like the Gangnam Style and all. What is that? What is that, Rick? Where'd that come from? You're always bringing me up to speed on things that came out 3 months later, 3 months earlier, and 3 months later, number one song. I didn't see it coming. I think that's what we're going to see in the next 4 years as well, is I didn't see it coming. We didn't see it coming. Oh, wow, this is so-and-so. 4 years from today, I really think we've never heard of, as of today, the number one song 4 years from today, who's singing it. That's my opinion, because entertainment industry seems to play out that way a lot of the time.
Could very well be. And what's interesting is you do expect that kind of instability in the music industry. You don't expect it so much in the political industry, especially in an election year. And yet, as we move to, I'm going to combine the next two categories, president and vice president on February 29th, 2020. You have a couple of ones here. Steve Cervillo votes in both instances for somebody not presently on the radar. So he must be figuring a brokered convention. Closest one to that would be Chris Galloway, who says Mitt Romney president, Marco Rubio vice president. He says by way of the House of Representatives with no Electoral College win in the fall. So he must be figuring on an independent candidacy, splitting the Electoral College, keeping anyone from getting to 270 electoral votes. From there, Tom Denk, and this was filed a couple of weeks ago, he may be reconsidering this at this point, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren being the ticket that wins. I think we'll have the hammer and sickle tattooed on the American flag in 4 years, if that's the case. Ron Glasnap votes Hillary Clinton president, Cory Booker vice president. I didn't necessarily anticipate we'd have two people voting the same way on both, but we did, because both myself and Kyle Ross said Hillary Clinton president and Julian Castro vice president. And you can especially see how, and again, he's been sucking up to the Clintons for years now. He's been thought of in terms of them having a shallow bench as being a bright up-and-coming guy that they'd want to glean to, especially now running against Trump with how he is against Hispanics as far as how they perceive him. That one makes all the sense in the world. And the last of the ones here that we haven't gotten to, of course, is yours, Nate, as you are voting for in this one, Donald Trump, Chris Christie. As just a couple of days ago from when we recorded this, Christie gave him the big endorsement.
Yeah, and again, I know Hillary's the favorite. I absolutely can see it. And I told you off air, I just can't envision a world where either Hillary or Donald Trump are president. But here we are, 8 months out, 7 months out from the election, and doesn't look like there's going to be any other choice between Hillary and Trump. And with Christie coming in and doing the whole endorsement thing, you know, he makes sense as a running mate for Trump, a little to the left of him. I can absolutely see Christie being the pick. And then it's like, why else would he come out with such a bold move of going all in on Trump, other than the fact that he's going to get the payoff on the back end of being the candidate? And I just can't envision Hillary. I have a hard time envisioning Donald Trump as president. I have a much harder time envisioning Hillary. And that's why I went with the Trump and Christie pick.
Well, your reasoning is as strong as anybody's. In this climate, who the hell knows what's going to happen? Again, a very volatile climate as well in the world of the pro graps. We always love to include this as a category. This is a new one this time. Pro wrestler that has the most days holding the WWE World Heavyweight title between February 29th, 2016 and 2020. Chris Galloway, whenever we do a wrestling one, he always has an interesting way of protesting the inclusion of it. He always comes up with a witty kind of a choice to protest it. He's going for The Miz as his choice, which I highly doubt is going to happen for the next 4 years, but I get a chuckle for it, an appreciative chuckle. Well done, Chris. Ron Glasnap going with Seth Rollins, a little bit of a dark horse at the moment. He's going to be coming back from injury shortly. He's been on top before. If they sour on their present favorite, hey, it could be him. The present favorite, of course, is Roman Reigns, who myself, Tom Denk, and Kyle Ross are going with. I wanted to go Finn Balor. I wanted to go off the board. I wanted to go for a dark horse down at NXT, somebody that I think has a huge upside when he gets called up. But they're so stubborn. Vince is so out of touch. He's not going to budge off of it being Roman Reigns. So by the time they figure out he's not the guy, he may have already banked enough days on top to where he'll be the guy. You, Nate Noy, going with the interesting one of Prince Puma, presently in Lucha Underground. So you have
That's
him
right.
moving over there, getting signed, and becoming champion for the most days. A very fascinating off-the-board choice. And this is where we bid adieu to Nate Noy, who is having to drop a little bit early here. We're going to finish this here in terms of going through the remaining categories. There are two that are left, and I'm going to get to the tiebreaker one first, because it's of less interest just because the major technological advance one is so great. That's the one that's number one, I think, by far. Percentage of internet-connected TVs in the U.S. up from 56% in 2015. That's the way that we're rolling with this, because, again, that was the most recent measurement that we were able to do. We're doing the closest to the pin, and this is going to determine who is the overall winner for this, because that is going to prevent there being a tie as there was last time around with Nate and I both tying for the most number of ones correct. If anybody if there is a tie, it will go to who was the closest in this one here, and this category can only be won then by one person. Kyle Ross going with the most fascinating pick of all. He says 100% of all TVs will be internet connected or smart TVs in 2020 on February 29th. Chris Galloway says 69%. He gave me some reasoning for this, and that was kind of interesting. Limited by poverty due to global depression and lack of high-speed internet in rural areas. Nate Noy says 85% of TVs. Steve Cervillo going on the low end with 59%. I said 84%, so Nate and I were almost right on the button as far as being together there. So I'm going to do well if it's just under 84%. He's going to do well if it's just over 85%. Tom Denk said 68%, and Ron Glasnap said 72%, because, again, this is what is marking the greatest conglomeration in terms of the merging of TV, internet, all forms of entertainment. We are seeing increasingly here that it is going to be in the smart TV and the TV internet connected TV or internet potentially connected TV arena. TVs that, even if they are not smart TVs, can be rendered smart TVs via a Roku stick or something similar to that. So this is a category here that, again, only one of us will win. And if there is a tie overall in the number of votes that we got correct, the number of predictions correct in the time capsule, whoever was closest on this one is going to be the winner. The one that we're saving for last, even though it was second to last on the ballot, this is the most interesting one. The major technological advance that we are predicting for the next 4 years. And this is one where, again, you can get a point if this is true to any degree in the next 4 years, because there's no real way of saying who was the most right on something like this. It's only like last time where I said jetpacks, where I was being kind of a homer for that. I was wrong, and jetpacks, of course, did not happen, especially commercial jetpacks, widely available ones here. Those did not materialize in the last 4 years, so I was wrong. So most of us have the potential to get a point in this category. These are some very interesting ones that we have here, and a little bit of overlap in terms of the technology. Ron Glasnap predicts smart appliances in addition to TVs. So we've already got, of course, smart TVs, but having other major home appliances connected to the internet. That is almost some real Jetsons-type territory right there. A fascinating one from Ron. Tom Denk says electrical cars and home solar energy storing units. So you can see where the two of those would go hand in hand, right? You've got the electrical cars. Being able to keep them powered and to have units that are able to charge them up, that is, in terms of those being widely available, that's one of the things that we're really kind of lacking at the moment here. But if there were commercial and home use solar energy storing units, you can see how that would take off. Kyle Ross going for the whimsical pick of flying cars. So Kyle's the one guy who, like myself with jetpacks last time, may get proven wrong. But we'll have to see. Stranger things have happened, I suppose. Nate Noy says release of the 5G standard for the wireless industry here for devices such as cell phones, internet connectivity, etc. For any type of wireless devices out there. And that's a really, really interesting one. He was telling me off air that the 5G could be up to 20 times faster than 4G. So it's just revolutionary as far as things getting to be closer and closer to what we would consider to be light speed and the mainstreaming of what we would consider to be light speed for the wireless internet. So we'll have to see how that materializes over the course of the next 4 years. I've been saving some of the more interesting ones for later on. Not that all of these haven't been interesting. They have been, but of the ones that are perhaps the most thought-provoking, Steve Cervillo says 3D printing for medical use. And you can kind of see how that might shake out in terms of, we're already seeing that a little bit. And so he has the advantage in that it's already happening to a degree. So it would only really be a situation of it being advanced sort of beyond that. We're seeing that a little bit these days in terms of, say, braces that are being made or external use, or even perhaps crowns in the mouth, 3D printing one of those. But there was a surgery, I believe, in late 2014 where somebody actually had, and again, we've been seeing over a period of time, right, artificial spines, devices being put in there. Somebody got a 3D printed spine implanted into their body and apparently functioning well at that point in time. So you can certainly see where that would continue to take off. In terms of 3D printing, again, Chris Galloway, I think, had the most fascinating prediction last time around when he predicted about the major expansion and mainstreaming of 3D printing over the last 4 years. And again, Nate Noy and I did not even know much about 3D printing. We were literally learning about it as we were talking about it. Now we're at a point where 4D printing is being talked about in much the same kind of way, and that is going to be my prediction, 4D printing. And what that is, it's hard to describe, as a couple of these things are, but if you're doing a 4D printing of something, you are programming in instructions for something to change shape and change use when it meets different conditions. Say, for example, you 3D print a pipe, but you imprint instructions in there for it to change shape underwater. This could lead to pipes underwater moving to pump the water through the pipe. You can kind of see how revolutionary that would be. And I've also seen other examples in terms of people talking about tennis shoes, that when you go to play basketball, the shoes will recognize the type of activity that you're doing, and they will give you more ankle protection as traditional basketball shoes tend to do. If you're out there trying to play football, these shoes will recognize, okay, this guy's running around on the turf, and you will grow cleats on the shoes, and it will take care of that usage right there. So 4D printing is something that I am predicting here. I'm going to give the last prediction overall to Chris Galloway. He certainly deserves it. In terms of what he came up with last time and in terms of what he came up with this time. And Chris is talking about the major expansion of nanotechnology over the course of the next 4 years. And Wikipedia, of course, defines that as manipulation of matter on an atomic, molecular, and supramolecular scale. And so we're talking about engineering of things down at the tiniest of units. And I won't even pretend to understand or try to explain to you in a short version here how that is going to come to pass and what that may be. But he is talking about how potentially even clothing could be affected by this, and that technology will be affected by this. That if you can engineer, it does stand to reason, right? If you could engineer something down to the very smallest of the units, the very smallest of cells, and the building blocks, as it were, if you could manipulate that for everything that gets manufactured, you can certainly see how you can really improve and increase the process of manufacturing these units. And again, probably not a great description of that, but that's sort of the limits of my understanding of it. Chris Galloway, as always, really kind of pushing the bounds here, challenging us to kind of understand and learn new things, and I do appreciate that from all of his predictions that he makes. In addition to Chris, my good friend Nate Noy, who joined us for most of the show here, the FDH Director of Research, also Kyle Ross, Steve Servillo, Tom Denk, Ron Glasnap. I want to thank all of them for filling out their forms also for this, their predictions. I, Rick Morris, have made my predictions as well, and we are sealing the February 29th time capsule, ladies and gentlemen. We will exhume it February 29th.
The Jaguar XE hasn't just redefined the sports saloon. With lightweight aluminium architecture and advanced driving dynamics, it's redefined performance. And from only £289 a month plus VAT on business contract hire, it's redefining your expectations. Didn't expect that, did you? Jaguar XE from £289 a month. Redefine your expectations at your local Jaguar retailer.
Initial rental £1,737 plus VAT. 36-month Jaguar contract hire. VAT at 20%. Offer ends 31st of March. 10,000 miles per annum. Mileage and return conditions apply. Visit jaguar.co.uk for more details.